Myself. There we are. Okay. Good evening and welcome to the Ward Councillors Candidates Forum. This is for Ward 3. This event will be recorded, as indicated. The link for the audio version of this event is posted in the chat room. Before we start this meeting, we acknowledge that we are gathered on the ancestral grounds of the Attawarandaran people and the territory of the Anishinaabeg and the Haudenosaunee, Métis and Mississaugas of the Credit. This land where we now live and work was their land for many thousands of years. This land is still home to over 6,500 First Nations, Métis and Inuit people. We hope in acknowledging territory that it contributes, however modestly, to the building of new relationships with the First Peoples of Canada. My name is David Douglas. I'm your host and moderator for this evening's event. My co-host, Horeen Hassan, will be ensuring the text side of things for this event runs smoothly, and we'll be monitoring the chat room throughout. For assistance, please post any problems in the chat. Mics will remain muted to minimize any background noise, and my colleague Sue Reinhardt will be our timekeeper for
but
this evening.
I don't
evening.
Have any video.
This event is hosted by the Guelph Wellington Coalition for Social Justice. This is a community-based coalition of individuals and organizations who advocate for equity, inclusivity, and the well-being of our community. Questions for the candidates are based on those formulated by a new community group called Get Involved Guelph. Tonight's agenda consists of introductions and opening remarks, followed by a question and answer session. The evening will end with closing remarks. During the opening remarks, each candidate will have 1.5 minutes to introduce themselves, present their campaign, and their vision for the City of Guelph. Then the question and answer begins with 7 questions, and we hope to get through these. Each candidate will have 1.5 minutes again to respond to each of the questions. It's expected that the candidates will not name any other candidates, not by name. If a candidate is named, that candidate will then have an additional minute to respond. We expect a respectful presentation. The moderator has the discretion and will mute any remarks that are deemed in any way disrespectful. We are hoping that after the round of prepared questions, the 7 questions, the virtual floor will be open to questions from the public. Now, with 5 candidates here this evening, this may not be likely. We play that by ear as best we can. But I encourage all attendees, all residents, to please post your questions in the chat box. They will not be lost, and all candidates will have access to them. Finally, each candidate will have 1.5 minutes for closing remarks, speaking in reverse order to the opening remarks roster. And we'll end today's session at 8:30 p.m. Candidates, our timekeeper will notify you with this bell. That's the bell which you hear when you have 15 seconds left in your presentation during your wrap-up remarks or your wrap-up session or any others. And after that 15 seconds, your mic will be muted. Now, the candidates who have joined us this evening are, I'll name them. We have Michelle Richardson. We have Kevin Bowman, Luke Cousineau, Phil Ault, and Sam Elmsley. And I welcome all of you this evening. The order of presentation has been predetermined by a random draw, which we conducted earlier. So to start, we recognize and hope that the technology is working well here. Michelle Richardson, can you present now, Michelle? Can't hear you. Michelle, we have no sound from you.
mute. There we go.
Got you. You're on.
Very good. Okay, perfect. Good. Sorry. Thank you. Good evening, everyone. My name is Michelle Richardson, and my little bit about myself. My parents were born and raised in Guelph. I was born in Edmonton, but only because my dad was in the Canadian military at the time. So we were out there for a couple of years and came back when I was very, very young. I grew up in the Sunny Acres Park area and went to Torrance Public School and Willow Road Public School. And I went on to become a registered nurse, where I worked for 13 years as a registered nurse at St. Joe's Hospital in Guelph. And then I went on to work at the County of Wellington, where I currently work in the HR department. My husband's been born in Guelph. We raised two beautiful young ladies in the city. And when I'm not working, you'll find me at the gym boxing, or you'll find me on the golf course. So, what my major decision for wanting to run this term is I felt it was probably a critical time for municipal government and really all levels of government in this post-pandemic phase. And I really want to work to help our city recover, revive, and thrive. And I want to build on the good work that the previous councils have done and ensure that we're using all our resources in order to make our city the best that it can be. Oh, now I can't hear you.
Have you concluded? That was your 15-second bell.
Yes, that's fine. I'm done. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Our next speaker in the draw is Kevin Bowman. Over to you, Kevin.
Thank you very much, David. Hello, everyone. Good evening. My name is Kevin Bowman. I'm running for Ward 3 City Councillor. I've lived in Guelph for over 16 years, moved here for university, and then never really left. I'm very happy to be able to participate in this event. I wanted to participate in the 10 Carden or 10C event, but unfortunately I'm recovering from a bout of COVID. So I apologize if I cough or turn my head at any time during this event. Please be patient with me. And my primary motivation for running is that I've been paying very close attention to the goings on at City Hall, and I've been talking to staff and city councilors about all kinds of things that have come before them over the past couple of years. So I feel pretty plugged in, but particularly in these post-pandemic, well, not really, times, I feel like the city is facing some really, really serious challenges, even crises, and the current councilors have even acknowledged this, but I don't feel they're moving with quite enough urgency. So my goal would be to bring a bit bolder of a vision and more urgency to council if I was elected.
Kevin, are you complete now? Okay. Michelle, your mic may not be muted.
I thought he was. I apologize.
Okay, it's now muted. You're now muted. Thank you. Okay, our next candidate presentation is Luc Cousineau. Luc, would you like to present now, please?
Sure, thank you. So my name's Luc Cousineau, and I was born in Guelph and I grew up in Guelph, and I moved away and then decided to move back. And part of that was for work, and part of that was I feel like this is a place, it's a good place to raise a family. And I have a family now, and I didn't when I moved back. I've worked for the Y. I went to high school here. I'm currently a university instructor, and I'm interested in running for council because I think that at this time, perhaps more than any other time, we need people in municipal government, really at all levels of government, but especially in municipal government, that are willing and able to engage with high quality science in decision making. I can do that. And I think that it's an important way to engage both in the context of social justice, but also in the context of good future-proof decision-making. So decisions that aren't just good for right now, but that are good in the long run. So for example, in our development decisions, are we making decisions that are good for Guelph now, but also good for Guelph 20 and 30 and 40 years from now? But we need to make those decisions now. And I think I can help do that. And my pronouns are he, they. Thank you.
Thank you, Lou. Thank you. Our next presenter is Phil Ott. Phil, over to you.
Thank you very much, David. Good evening to all who are attending, and I want to thank Get Involved Guelph for this forum. My name is Phil Ault. I've been counselor here for 8 years and been essentially a lifelong resident of Ward 3. For me, future Guelph growth is its greatest issue. By provincial mandate, Guelph is growing too quickly. We're stressing our water capacity, our infrastructure, roads, and facilities. We must categorically reject the pro-development mantra and reaffirm smart development. When council rejects a development, it rejects it because of a concern for height, water, traffic, or over-intensification. That is what a wise councillor will do. In Ward 3, Willow Road is the most densely populated area in Guelph with the fewest facilities and enhancement. More growth is coming to Willow West, and I fear for that. I fear because we have also the poorest people in Guelph in that area. And poverty and homelessness affect us all. We must return dignity to those living rough and homeless. We must ensure that shelter is provided, that we address food insecurity and other issues. Homelessness is a public health issue. Effective support for health and hygiene for our outdoor living benefits everyone. We must address the challenges of GO and rail service and insist that CN and Metrolinx work closely with all residents so rail improvements do not degrade neighborhoods. There are so many questions I have not covered. I hope to get to them via your questions. Again, thank you very much to Get Involved Guelph.
Thank you, Phil. Our next presenter is Sam Elmsley. Sam, over to you.
Hi, thanks for that. My name is Sam Elmsley. I might be familiar to some of you from my 2+ decades in the hospitality industry in Guelph. I'm originally from Montreal, Quebec. I'm the middle child of a very close family. We grew up a little bit on the East Coast, a little bit in Eastern Ontario before settling in the GTA. A few years out of high school, I decided to come to Guelph to do my undergrad, and I fell in love with both Guelph but its people. And along the way, I also fell in love with the service and hospitality industry, which I spoke of just earlier. It means a lot to me. The engagement and connections I've had over the years in that industry are invaluable to me. And with that in mind, I'd like to broaden it to serve greater Guelph. So I live in Ward 3. I'd like to represent Ward 3. And with my attitude towards service, I would like to do that with an eye towards progress, sustainability, inclusion, and I'd like to listen to and engage with the community and the constituents. Thanks for this opportunity too. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Sam. Thank you to all candidates for those opening remarks on your campaign. Now we move on to the set of program questions, if I can put it that way. We have 7 questions that have their basis in some work that was done by Get Involved 12 earlier this year. So I'll start off with the questions, and I'll stay with the order of candidates at this stage. So our first question, which I'll start with Michelle, is the following, and it relates to well-being. The vision statement of Guelph's strategic plan is, quote, an inclusive, connected, prosperous city where we look after each other and our environment, unquote. The first adjective is inclusive. While most Guelphites value diversity, some citizens still suffer from hate and other forms of abuse, such as racist and anti-2SL GBTQ plus incidents. The question to you is, how will you help Guelph progress this inclusivity vision? Michelle.
Thank you. It's a very important issue, and the key to inclusivity is education and leading by example. The city should partner with organizations like CCDI, which is the Canadian Center for Diversity and Inclusion. And I'm hoping that they already probably have a diversity and inclusion committee within their organization as far as staff goes. And unconscious bias training should be mandatory for all city council members, all city council employees, or city of Guelph employees. We are a wonderfully diverse city, and we need to start with new people as they come to our community, and we need to connect with them right away, whether it's through social services and immigration services, and let them know that their opinions are valued here and they're valued here, and let them know that there are opportunities for them to help work on inclusivity, diversity and inclusion in our community. There are advisory committees, and I'm not sure if the city has a diversity and inclusion committee that includes members of the community, and having their voice on that advisory committee is a really important feature for that. I was a member of the Wellington County Accessibility Advisory Committee back since 2004, really, and we were had community members on that committee, and we developed the first facility accessibility design manual to try to make facilities and our parks and trails accessible to everyone.
So I'm going to interrupt you here, if I may. Move on to the next respondent.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Our next respondent to this question would be Kevin Bowman. Kevin, over to you.
Thank you very much. Yes. In terms of the inclusivity term of the city's vision statement, I think, well, there's a famous quote I like. It says, there are no people who are voiceless. There are those who are preferably unheard and the deliberately ignored. And I think there's something to that. I think the members who have been marginalized don't trust our institutions, including City Hall. I think they've learned the hard way that these institutions don't exist to serve them. And so I think the way forward in terms of inclusivity is that trust needs to be earned. And in my opinion, the best way to do that is to listen to the people who have been deliberately ignored or preferably unheard, and to give them resources and put them in a position to actually affect change and improve their situation. They understand their situation much better than I do. Me as some white guy coming onto city council and trying to solve their problems for them is not going to result in good things. I think it's much better that I would use my position as much as possible to advocate for them and direct resources towards them so that they can do what they think needs to be done. And in closing, I would just say that actually one of the reasons I'm running is because when I heard that there was an opening on city council, I encouraged two young women of color to run for city council, but both of them decided that their efforts were better spent elsewhere. And so I decided to throw my hat into the ring.
Thank you, Kevin. Our next respondent would be Luc Cousineau. Over to you, Luc.
Thank you. I think I'm going to respond to the question. I'm going to start with a question. And that is, in striking an inclusivity vision, are we willing to acknowledge that we need to do that because we act in exclusive ways? If we want to understand inclusivity in the context of City Hall or post-secondary institutions, educational institutions more broadly, we have to first, of course, acknowledge that these places are exclusive. And so when we are talking about representation, are we really talking about representation and power within institutions, or are we talking about tokenism? Because we, the people sitting here answering this question, can talk an awful lot about what we're willing to do, but I see five white faces and I see five people that have the means to run for council. And perhaps we need to start at the very core of how our institutions function. I think the part of this question that speaks to hate is really important. I'm the co-director of research with the Canadian Institute for Far-Right Studies, where we do critical research on the rise of the far right in Canada. And it's growing, and it's here. So I think that when we talk about inclusion, we need to have a broad vision of what that means. We need to be really aware of tokenism. And we need to be taking real steps to have representation and power.
Thank you.
And power to people that aren't us.
Thank you. Our next respondent would be Phil Alt. Over to you, Phil.
Thank you, David. I'm a strong supporter of ending systemic racism, sexism, homophobia, and xenophobia in all of its forms. I support enhancing anything that opens doors for others. I have worked with immigrant services out on the shelf. I have been engaged in the multicultural community. I regularly attend the mosque in Guelph and support our Muslim friends who have for many years been routinely segregated against by many in the community. I believe the diaspora of Guelph needs further support and most importantly needs me, like others have said, a white male, to listen and then to act, to understand what it is like to face the inequities in front of them. And that doesn't matter whether it's race, religion, gender, whether it is sexual preference, whether it's age, or whether it's even poverty. Let's not forget, we systemically discriminate against those suffering poverty. And this is perhaps one of the most important challenges because it compounds with issues of racism as well. Racism in my Guelph has no play, neither do any of the other forms of bigotry. And we should continue to root them out wherever we can. I believe this whole group is behind that. And I think we can all work to enhance Guelph, both through the city of Guelph and through the community of Guelph as well.
Thank you, Phil. Our final respondent on this question is Sam Elmsley. Sam, over to you.
Hi, thanks for that. I think that's a great question. I also think I mentioned earlier, I lived in quite a few places. Guelph's the only place that I felt comfortable moving to as an adult, an openly gay adult, and where I felt safe and valued and celebrated, actually. So I think in a lot of ways, we have a lot of improvements to make. But in a lot of ways, we can also be very proud that people chose to come here because of its openness. That being said, while being openly gay, I'm also openly an old white guy as well. And I recognize there's a lot of privilege inherent in that. And so I think the inclusivity issue should involve a lot of listening to people as individuals. I think it involves facing criticism, acknowledging criticism, and not being defensive about it, but more openness and trying to understand how somebody could feel excluded. And finally, I think we need to find people who don't necessarily recognize the barriers they're facing and help them overcome those as well, meeting people where they are.
Thank you very much to all candidates for their response to that first question. The next question is on climate change, or some people might word it, the climate crisis. In December 2021, the city committed to prepare and work towards interim community-wide greenhouse gas emission targets by the end of June 2022. However, only targets for the city corporation itself have been developed, accounting for about 2.2% of the community's total. So the question is, what would you do to accelerate the implementation of the city's commitment to a comprehensive city-community partnership for Guelph to reach net zero by 2050? And we'll start off again with Michelle, if you would, please.
Thank you. Greenhouse gases is one of the the areas that municipalities can have the most influence on. And, you know, Guelph's carbon footprint, the city as an employer and an organization, their footprint is only 3%. 97% comes from the rest of the city. So it's a lot of, we can influence that basically with policies, incentive programs, and support programs, as well as education and leading by example. We need to share the resources that we have with the private sectors. We can't expect them to know how to reinvent the wheel and make all the changes that they need to make without any support from the city. We can also provide incentives for new buildings, buildings, solid waste, and those are the two most important, buildings and solid waste, as far as a city, is where we can make the most difference in new builds, not using gas to build to with new built homes. They should all be based on a cleaner energy source. Guelph's already making really great progress with their transit and working towards their buses, and ensuring that we have enough green spaces for the projected growth is also going to be really important as far as reducing our net zero, or reaching our net zero goal.
Thank you. Our next respondent on this question is Kevin Bowman. Kevin, over to you.
Thank you very much. So, yes, as Michelle identified, the vast majority of the emissions in the city are not by the city, the corporation itself, it's by the community at large. So I would very much support setting interim targets for the community at large and having the city have a very concrete strategy as to how we're going to meet those interim targets. My understanding is the two largest sources of greenhouse gas emissions within the city would be heating buildings, as mentioned by Michelle, and all transportation. And I think that there's a bunch of ways you can tackle those. One is, as Michelle mentioned, not making gas the primary way of heating future buildings. You could also drastically increase the standard on insulation for new buildings. We need to do retrofits of existing buildings to get them off of gas and to get them insulated better so that they're meeting a higher standard. I know in some places in Europe, the current insulation standard means that you can heat a family home with the equivalent energy of like a hairdryer, which is way below, like approaching 80% reduction over what is required to heat a Canadian home. So the technology already exists. We can do this. In terms of transportation, the best way to tackle that is, of course, better transit, better active transportation, and also changing up our zoning. Rather than having big, huge chunks of the city where only residences can be, and therefore people have to live far away from where they work and where they shop. If we had more mixed use zoning, people would be able to do their shopping and maybe get to work without needing a car at all. And so these are potential ways to tackle these issues.
Thank you. Our next respondent is Luke Cousineau. So over to you, Luke.
Thank you. At the risk of sounding repetitive, I have a question, which is, if we are going to do things in the city, if we're going to build supports, who are we building those supports for? If we are giving incentives, are those incentives going to the people in the city that need them, or are they going to the people in the city that can afford them? In this ward, we have vast diversity of socioeconomic status. And so, if we're giving incentives, if the city's doing incentives, are they going to go to the Willow West neighborhood where they should go? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question, but I have a speculation. I'm gonna echo a little bit what Kevin and Michelle have both said, that one of the important ways we need to do this is through better transit and better active transportation networks. And I think one of the ways we do that is make it harder to drive cars in this city. There are a variety of ways to do that. Make it less convenient to drive cars and make it more convenient to do things other ways. But the individual homeowner, the individual citizen in the city produces far less greenhouse gas emissions than industry. So what can we do at the municipal level to work with the province and, well, probably right now the Fed, around regulating industry production because that's a huge thing in our city. Do I want to limit industry in the city? Certainly I do not, because that's jobs, that's economy, that allows us to make these changes. But it's something that we need to look at, and we need to be working with it, other levels of government to work on. Thank you.
Thank you, Lou. Our next respondent on this is Phil Alt. Phil, over to you.
Thank you very much. I do believe that we must make every effort to address climate change. We must ensure that we support development, housing developments in which geothermal heating is provided, where solar panels are installed, and which are equipped with home electricity storage batteries. This will not be an easy challenge. This requires us to address issues of building code, and that's something that is, for all intents and purposes, a provincial issue. 100% renewable energy is a goal that must be earnestly engaged with, targets set every 5 years that increase our renewable energy usage for the foreseeable future. It's simply not enough to have targets for 2050. We must have them in the short term. I'm going to advocate something that most people have not considered, and that is that the city be provided with the latitude for a petroleum tax. And I say that because it can do two things. It can provide us with the funds for projects that are necessary, and also it will also provide an incentive for people to consider electric cars as well. And the city can provide more support for electric cars with more charging stations as well. But let's not forget, the city has a big role, and we need to re-explore the district energy proposals that address the issues of waste heat in large structures. People that have mentioned that industry is the greatest cause of global warming are quite correct. Well, that industry is also the greatest cause of waste heat. We need to capture that waste heat and use it to produce electricity. Just like in the circular food economy, let's have a circular energy economy in Guelph.
Thank you. Okay, our final respondent on this is Sam Elmsley.
Thank you. So I think as one of my colleagues said earlier, I think we should be looking at science towards this issue. I don't claim to be an expert on climate change. I do think the improvement standards are a little on the low side. Some of the things we can look at, we have over 500 city properties. I think we could maybe do some retrofitting there. There could maybe be some incentives provided. I also think, just on a personal level, lawns. I got a survey, I'm sure we all got a survey about pollinators and pollination. All these businesses and all these residences with green lawns that could be having pollinating plants. We could be building new structures with, I believe it's called photovoltaic roofs. But as far as development's concerned, I think it's probably our job as council to insist that when developers propose new developments, they do that with an eye towards climate change, sustainability, and their water footprint as well, and put some of the onus on the developers instead of the council to insist on it. Thank you.
Thank you very much to all candidates for responses on that. Our next question relates to housing. Now, there's a growing demand for more housing in Guelph, including affordable, social, and supportive housing. The province has targeted for substantial growth in Guelph, which, of course, will challenge our sustainability. So there's two related questions here. The first is, how would you accelerate the rate of infill, intensification, and mixed-use development in Guelph? And the second related question would be, would you welcome social housing construction in your ward, along with increased annual funding for the Affordable Housing Reserve? And for this, I'll start off the responses with Phil Alt. So over to you, Phil, please.
Thanks very much, David. That's a tremendously challenging question. It's one that I appreciate. The housing issue is a massive one. With housing costs for building approaching about $300 a square foot, We are looking at approximately $250 million or more to build appropriate housing for everybody in Guelph. I believe in inclusive zoning. I believe in accessory units in within the city. But most importantly, I believe in engaging the federal and the provincial governments to get back into both supportive housing and co-op housing. But I also want to be very careful. Your question framed this and said, how would you accelerate the rate of infill? And I would answer by saying very carefully. If we do not provide the infrastructure, including the plants, the parks, and the green spaces for that infill, we create a density problem in Guelph. It is not a simple issue, but it is one that we must grasp. I am opposed to sprawl. This is why I say I believe in smart growth, and I do not believe in a pro-development council. We need a smart development council that embraces all aspects of it. I am fearful for Guelph's water supply. We're growing to 208,000 by 2051. And even this year, we witnessed one of the most significant water shortages that we've had in some time. We cannot accelerate that. So we must be careful on any growth and look to provide safe, affordable housing for all.
Okay, thank you. Our next respondent on this will be Kevin Bowman. Kevin?
Thank you very much. I would start by saying that I largely agree with what I heard from Phil, so I would just reemphasize that. I'll expand on it a bit by saying that what one of the other things I think Guelph could be doing, the most direct thing that the city can be doing is around zoning and land use. So there was a comprehensive zoning bylaw review that took place recently, and there was some positive change that was proposed there to eliminate single detached family dwellings and to make it easier to develop, you know, duplexes, triplexes, accessory dwelling units, etc. I don't think it went quite far enough, though. The city is still currently talking about 50% of new development happening in green fields, never developed previous land, and the other 50% being infill. I think we should be leaning heavily more into the infill because, as Phil mentioned, there are concerns about infrastructure, and infill developments tend to attach to existing infrastructure. You're not building new infrastructure like you are in a greenfield development. And density is important. That's how we're going to get there. But density is not necessarily the enemy of green space and parks. As Phil mentioned, you have to be smart about how you do it. For instance, there's a city that I visited in Europe last time I was traveling, and it has a city density that's much higher than Guelph's, but I think roughly 40% of the space within the city limits is green space because they've compressed everything into the built up areas into these little nodes, sort of villages within the city.
Thank you.
So that's something we could be looking at.
Thank you. Our next respondent will be Michelle Richardson. Over to you, Michelle.
Thank you. And yes, we're a very agreeable group, I must say, and I did notice that when I attend C as well. We're very much on the same page, and affordability and housing situation is a province-wide issue, and we really do need to advocate to our upper levels of government in order for new permanent affordable housing to be available. The funding that they're giving us at this point is not enough to support the needs of our community. We have low vacancy rates, which drives up our prices, and we need to increase that supply in order to decrease the demand and make things more affordable for people. And I totally agree with Phil and Kevin in the infill. I think we would all support infill. It just has to be managed appropriately so that we make sure that we do have the proper infrastructure. We also need to continue to work and promote the rent support programs such as the Canadian Ontario Housing Benefit and the Wellington County Affordable Home Ownership Down Payment Loan is another benefit that I don't know how many people realize is available, where they'll provide $20,000 to a home buyer for a down payment that doesn't have to be paid back either until they sell the house or until they, if they're there 20 years, that loan's forgiven. So lots of creative options.
Okay. Thank you, Michelle. Our next commentator on this would be Sam Elmsley.
Hi, thank you. Yeah, I largely agree with what everyone said as well. I think more money needs to come from the province. Yeah, I think we need a lot more both supportable and geared to income housing. It's a question that I'm quite struggling with. I was doing a lot of reading about this, and in some places, Finland, I believe housing is a right, and I would really like to see that be an eventuality here, but I know that's a long-term goal. As Phil was saying, we're set to have 208,000 people. We're currently using 60% of our available water supply, and it is more than likely that that will run out by the time we hit our 2051 goals. So I'm a big fan of infill. I believe in it. I support it. I would like to do anything I can do to help it. I also live in a neighborhood where, to be honest, there's a large availability for accessory apartments, and a lot of people choose not to rent out those spaces because, being a landlord, there is some difficulty there as well. And yeah, anyway, I think anything we can do, we need to look to the experts and see how we can increase this.
Thank you. Our next question relates to the library. I'm sorry, I beg your pardon. Look, my apologies. I had you marked here ahead of time.
Okay, that's quite all right.
Over to you. Let democracy reign.
So,
thank you.
I'm not going to repeat what other people have said here, and granted, we are an agreeable group. But I do think that we need to be contextualizing development and how this is happening. 208,000 by 2050 is not our goal. That's something that the province has told us is going to happen. So are we doing development for development's sake, or are we doing development for Guelph? Are we doing development that's smart, that makes sense for what we need in this city and what new residents of the city are going to need when they move here? Because those are not our goals and those are not our targets. And we do not realistically have to abide by them. So something to think about. I'm going to address the second part of this question, which, would we welcome social housing construction in our ward? We are the ward of social housing. I mean, I can, like, what the Parkview, the redevelopment of the Parkview Motel, that counts. But, like, by and large, the social housing in this city, a lot of it is in our ward. I can hit it with a rock, not really, not quite that close. But, I mean, it's really close to my house. And so the idea of would we welcome it? Well, the other social housing development projects that are proposed in the city are also in this ward. And part of the reason for that is NIMBYism from other parts of the city. Why isn't it spread out amongst other wards? Great question for somebody that's not me. But I think that that's an important piece of this. Of course I would. The people that live in the social housing that's already in this ward, they are excellent and they bring a ton of cultural diversity to the city that we don't get anywhere else.
Thank you, Luke. Okay, and on to our next question relates to the library. Surprise, surprise. As an anchor component of the Baker District development, the new main branch library will bring significant social, economic, and tourism benefits to Guelph. The project is already well underway. Breaking contracts would cost taxpayers millions, and we'd lose the housing units that are attached to the project. Please speak to your views on this particular topic. And this go round, let's start with Phil Alt, please.
Sorry, I had trouble getting my mute off there. I apologize. I'm a fan of the library. And I believe that the library needs to be understood for what a multifaceted and important project that it is. It's not just a place that's a depository for books, it's an economic engine as well. And the fact that we hear of people that are talking about throwing away $15 to $25 million that have already been committed to the library and possibly creating reputational risk for Guelph is a significant concern to me. One of the challenges that the library will help us to answer is essentially the erosion of commercial space in one area of Wyndham Street that is bounded by Quebec Street and Woolwich Street. And primarily that will happen as a consequence of residential development that will occur in that area and the need for more shops and services. I'm hoping, because we have current government offices that are located on Wyndham Street, that this will lead to a return of retail in that area as well, as we're looking at putting about 1,000 people in that area at the very least. But let's consider this. For working people and for others who are on limited and fixed incomes, the library is a place of knowledge and it's a place of research. It's also a place of support for many, many people. I remember as a kid using the library to do my homework in both high school and elementary school. I thought I was cool. I thought I looked like a university student. I probably looked like a twerp, but that's besides the point. I was there because the resources were there. And I've heard of some people disparage the library and say people don't use it. That is categorically untrue. We must embrace the library, and we must recognize that a city of 150,000 growing to 208,000 needs a library that can sustain the future, sustain Guelph into the future, and make good on promises from a long time ago.
Okay. Thank you. Our next respondent on this will be Sam Elmsley. Over to you, Sam.
Hi, thanks. Yeah, not surprisingly, I'm actually also pro-library. I think we all discovered that when Rogers shut down for a full day, I don't know, 6 weeks ago or whenever it was, libraries certainly got a lot of use that day. I also think it'll add a visual appeal to our downtown. I work in a bar. I'm a fan of bars, but I think we have quite a few bars we could use. A place of learning, a place for people to collect. I think it's a place where people can find work. They can use the internet. They can find community. They can, you know, if they're from another culture, they can find information related to their culture. And yeah, it's also our citizens experiencing homelessness. It's a warm, safe place for them to go and sometimes find some help. I have a really hard time seeing a downside to libraries. And I think, well, being the fantastic place it is to live and work, we also want to attract like more doctors. Maybe having something like a state-of-the-art library in its own small way will do that. I just don't see the con other than admittedly the price.
Thank you. Our next respondent on this will be Michelle Richardson. Michelle, over to you.
Thank you. And it's probably no surprise, I am also a huge supporter of our library. We've needed it for a long, long time. And I think people forget libraries are not just about books anymore. They're a place of community. They're actually normally generate an economic profit. They are a community resource that is suitable for all ages, from infants to the elderly. They have children's programming. There's book clubs. And it's just such a valuable community resource. And with the new whole Baker Street development, it will be a real hub down there. And I can't express enough. I think it's been long overdue, and it'll be a great project when it's done, and one that I would be really, really proud to be part of seeing to fruition.
Thank you very much. Next respondent will be Luke Cousineau on this one. Over to you, Luke.
I made the list this time. I think that when I hear people talk about maybe we should scrap the library, I think it is laughably short-sighted and regressive policy for a number of reasons. First of all, the amount of money that we will lose by cutting the project is roughly equal to the amount of money that people are upset about it going to cost on top of cost recovery measures and stuff. Like it's laughably bad fiscal policy to just axe this project. And so I agree with all of the other social motivators that people have brought up here, but like, if people want to get to brass tacks about the financial of it, well, it would be bad financial policy, bad fiscal policy to cut it as well. Investment in libraries, there's really good research out of the United States that especially in underserved communities, libraries can generate 10 times the investment capital in economic return when averaged out over over what's happening in the local economy around those libraries. And so if we're not factoring that into our decision-making, again, it's bad fiscal policy. Going to our main branch library is like getting in a time machine because it looks exactly the same as when I went there as a kid, except now there's computers and a 3D printer downstairs. But when I take my kid to that library, it's like I'm going back in time and I'm going to see Kidio in the activities room. It's laughable. Go to the downtown Kitchener Library and you will see a modern library that has done wonders to change a part of a city and has generated amazing things.
Thank you. And final comment on the library question, over to you, Kevin.
Thank you very much. I very strongly agree with everything I've heard from the other candidates. I love the library. I think it's critical to the downtown Baker Street development. I love it for what it is. And I also think the fiscal arguments that people are making against it are ridiculous and should be dismissed out of hand. That's my view on the library. If you'll permit me, I realized I didn't actually answer the second part of your previous question. So I'm gonna take a moment to speak to that, which was, would I welcome social housing construction in the ward along with increased annual funding for the affordable housing reserve? The answers are yes and yes.
Thank you. That was explicit. Thank you all on that particular question. Our next question relates to public transit. And it is generally understood that public transit use in cities must double by 2030 to meet climate goals and emission targets. So the question is, what would you do to help us meet this target? And I'll start off with Kevin, again, straight off the hop on this one.
Okay, thank you very much. So I've lived in Guelph for about 16 years, and all but three of those years, I did not own a car. So, and I also worked as a bus driver for Guelph Transit for about a year. So I'm very familiar with the transit system. I'm a big supporter of it. I think it's been neglected for far too long. And yes, if we want to reach our climate goals, we should be putting much more time and energy into our transit system and making it the preferred choice for people who live in the city, even if they own a car. And for anybody who thinks that sounds anti-car, well, if there's a lot more people on a bus, that means the road's going to be less congested. So if you stay in your car, you're actually going to like it better this way too. I think I'll leave it at that.
Thank you. Next respondent on the public transit question is Sam Elmsley. Sam, over to you.
Thank you. Yes, I would like to see transit upgraded as well. I would like to see it supported much more, and I would like to see it used much more. Personally, I've never really used Guelph Transit, unfortunately. I've always worked in a role where I finish work at 2:30 in the morning and there isn't really a bus running for you. So I think increased flexibility for people who work different shifts might encourage more transit use as well. I did try to memorize all of Guelph's bus routes, and it's pretty comprehensive, but I think it could be better. I think it could be more efficient. I live in front of a bus route, and more often than not, the bus is empty. I don't know if that's how it returns to the station, but I think we have a lot of room for improvement. And I think definitely we need to speak to the people who take transit to improve it. And I think we need to speak to the people who work in transit of what can be done to make transit more efficient. I think the people who do the jobs will have a lot of the answers for us.
Okay, thank you, Sam. Our next respondent on this one will be Michelle. So Michelle, over to you.
Yes, and I'm again going to agree with both Sam and Kevin. It's our transit system. I haven't had a lot of personal use on the transit system. I too have either been close enough to walk to work or been out of town. But I have heard quite a bit of this from residents that I've been talking to over the last little while, and many are complaining that the system is inefficient. It's not meeting their needs. And buses are often late and putting people late for them getting to work. And I think we really need to, get surveys done from the people who are using the system and where are we falling short of meeting their needs. And I think that's part of being in the local government and municipal government, is listening to the residents and trying not to figure out what we think the needs of the community are, but actually connecting with the community to make sure that we are meeting their needs. And I also agree, including the transit operators. I'm sure they have some really valuable insight from being those people who are on the front line, and they're often forgotten about when we're looking at, revamping a system or making changes to try to improve. Thank you.
Thank you. Ahead of time. Next respondent will be Luke. Over to you, Luke.
So the premise of the question is that we believe that transit needs to double by 2030, right? But if we use the 2050 numbers, we're looking at an increase in population of 35% in Guelph. And I've never met anybody that says public transit in Guelph is sufficient. So if we're going to increase our population at the rate that we've been talking about, and we're going to increase transit at the rate that we're talking about here, we're still not going to have enough. I grew up in what was then the very south end of Guelph, Courtright Road. It is not the south end of Guelph anymore. And transit was laughably bad in that area then. And it's not improved. I would choose my bicycle over public transit in the city any day, because it doesn't matter where I'm going. I can get there always faster on my bicycle. Now, I have a lot of privilege because I can do that. I'm able-bodied. I'm able to bicycle. I'm able to do that. But it says a lot about how we have treated transit over time in this city as the lowest transportation priority, aside from perhaps cycling, which is ostensibly dangerous. And so I think when we're talking about this, how are we going to meet this target? I agree with Kevin in particular, who says, we need to make transit attractive and more attractive than driving. And Kevin said, I'm not anti-car. Well, my feeling is we need to make transit more attractive than cars, and we do that by making cars less attractive to drive. So am I anti-car? No, I have one, but I'd rather not have to use it.
Thank you. Final commentary on this particular item would be Phil.
Thank you very much. Years ago, I was asked to do what was called the bus challenge and take the bus for a month. And I discovered at that point that, for all intents and purposes, the mantra, you can't get there from here, truly applied. This was something that was told to me by bus riders, and I think it's fairly important. It's important because kudos to current staff, drivers, and management for looking to improve our transit system. And I regret that oftentimes the obstacle to that improvement is city council. We often tend to underfinance the transit that's needed. But here's an important suggestion. I believe that transit should be taken over 100% by the provincial government. We already have Metrolinx and we have GO, and that is a spoke system that requires everybody to go to Toronto. But when we're talking transit, we're not just talking Guelph. We're talking getting to Hamilton, getting to Toronto, getting to Kitchener-Waterloo, Fergus, Owen Sound, and a number of places. Without effective provincial support for transit, we are going to struggle because we must provide a minimum percentage of the funding for transit from fares. This is not enough to do what we need to do. Thanks to Guelph Transit for purchasing electric buses and trying to move us into the future. We need to move more quickly, and we need to require the province to step up and ensure that public transit is part of our priorities to dampen global warming and climate change.
Thank you. Thank you all for that responses to that question. The next topic is police and related matters. Now, there's been considerable community discussion about reallocating some public resources that are currently assigned to the police to other agencies, agencies that are qualified in harm reduction in crisis contexts associated with homelessness, mental health, substance abuse, and related matters. Please share your thoughts on this particular matter. And let me start with Michelle this time.
Thank you. Sorry, I have a grandfather clock going, so bear with me on that one. I was hoping we'd get past the 8 o'clock, but as a registered nurse, I have a really unique insight into the mental health and addiction issues that are happening in the city of Guelph. And I'm also on the Patient and Family Advisory Committee at the Guelph General Hospital, and also I'm on the Master Planning Committee for the new hospital for the city of Guelph. And one of the key fundamental areas that we're looking at is adding more mental health inpatient beds. Where I'm getting that in a long way around is that the police presence that needs to be used at the general hospital in order to manage the safety of the nurses and staff who are working there is insurmountable. It's costing our city a small fortune. And I believe that, impact workers would be a fabulous addition to the police force. I'm a huge supporter of our local police force. They work hard and they have a really, really difficult job. I think having the police trained as impact workers would be incredibly helpful because, an impact worker alone doesn't have the skills that maybe to be put into the situation that they're going to be when they're dealing with someone who is in a mental health crisis. So, I 100% support our police and trying to help give them the skills that they need to manage in a more effective and better way.
Thank you. Next response on this would be from Sam Elmsley. So Sam, over to you.
Thank you. I think I would definitely support allocation of funds towards mental health support. I think a lot of the issues happening in Guelph right now are not police matters. I'm not sure that means taking money away from the police per se. I think police, fire, paramedics, emergency services, especially as Guelph has this commitment to grow, they're still going to be required just on the same level. But I do believe there's a lot of substance abuse, opioid use, mental health crisis that need people that aren't necessarily police officers helping, intervening. And I think that funding, we should be lobbying the province for more money for these crises. Guelph sort of, for Wellington County, a kind of central spot. So a lot of people from outlying communities might be having their problems here. And I think we need some provincial money to help look after some of these issues. And yeah, I don't think it necessarily means taking away from any one other service. I think it's adding two.
Okay, thank you. Next respondent on this would be Kevin Bowman. So over to you, Kevin.
Thank you very much. Yes, I agree with the redistribution of resources away from police to other places. I think the police have been called on to do many things that they don't exist to treat or deal with because of underfunding in other areas. We took money away or cut from other places and we gave it to police. We're not trained to deal with those situations, and now we're in the situation where we are. And I don't say this because I'm pro-crime or anything like that, but the reality is police don't prevent crime. Housing prevents crime. Affordable housing prevents crime. Detox and addiction services prevent crime. Social workers prevent crime. These are the things we should be putting that money into.
Thank you. Next commentary on this will come from Phil. Phil Ott. Over to you.
Thank you. It's the question of the police budget and how we fund the police is a very important one. We've heard a great deal about psychological support and social services support, but there are other aspects of it as well that we need to address. One of which is the capacity of the police to deal with such issues as domestic violence as well. In some ways, what we need to do is examine a wholesale retraining of police, not just in Guelph, but throughout Ontario, to make certain that as we are dealing with police, we are dealing with the compassionate approach to many people who are in a situation they never wanted to be in. Consider this: not one homeless person nor addict put in their high school yearbook when they left high school, "My career goal is to be homeless and to be an addict." They are there by circumstances that they had no control over. We're not dealing with people that wanted to be on the street, and yet we deal with them in a paramilitary approach, and this is problematic. So as a consequence, we need to recognize that policing is a very broad-based concern that doesn't just deal with the American style of violent issues, but must deal with many of the social issues as well. I welcome the Welcoming Streets Initiative that the City of Guelph has put into place. I welcome it when the police come forward and try to provide some elements of social services support. But the paramilitary aspects of it are those that I think that we need to recognize need to be reviewed very seriously. And we need to look at how do we deal with the least fortunate amongst us, because oftentimes they are both traumatized and then become overly victimized because their fear of police. And it's a well-founded fear because they have been victims of authority in the past.
Thank you, Phil. Okay, I'm going to interrupt if I may. And our last commentator on this will be from Luke. Luke, over to you.
I think what everybody on this panel today is getting at is that to speak about police funding isn't an isolated issue, it is a systems issue. And the important thing about that is that currently police receive approximately just under 20% of the total city budget, and arguably they do not provide 20% of all of the services that the city provides. And so I do not want to be misconstrued as being anti-police, but I do have significant issues with the system that we have created that leans so heavily on police for a wide variety of jobs that they cannot possibly be properly trained for. It is impossible. Think about your own job. Now think about your six best friends and the jobs they do that are different than yours, and then make them all your job. That's what it's like to be a police officer, for all of the reasons that people on this panel have already covered. That we have layered and layered and layered work on police that they cannot possibly be properly trained for. And then we complain about the outcomes. This is a systems issue. And it is a system that has wildly, wildly bad oversight. Our mayor was sitting on the police services board when they were using Clearview AI, which is a deep, deep, penetrating, problematic piece of program that invaded the privacy of everybody in this city.
Thank you, Luke.
And the police services board let it happen.
Thank you very much. Our final question relates to, perhaps very appropriately, a question of democracy, local democracy. And it's been widely stated that the province's ministerial zoning orders, or MZOs, as they're sometimes called, and more recently, the strong mayor's legislation, Bill 3, recently passed, are contrary to healthy local democratic process. What are your views on this particular topic? And I'll start off with Michelle, please.
Thank you. Yes, that's another, that's a really heavy topic. And absolutely, the MZOs and the Strong Mayors Act are contrary to a to our democratic processes. We don't want the province coming in and telling us how we need to zone our local neighborhoods and areas, and nor should one single person, mayor or not, have that kind of power. That's why we have a council. We have a council that needs to work cohesively, and that's how we get to our best decisions, by listening to the opinions of others and the thoughts of others, and not leaving it up to one person to make a solid decision and be able to veto everything that their council has said. We should have a strong united front as a council. We're definitely stronger together than independently. And same with keeping the province at the distance. The province should not be able to come in and provide zoning orders to anything contrary to what we want in our own neighborhoods. Thank you.
Thank you. Next respondent, I would ask Sam Elmsley to comment on this, please.
Thanks. I generally agree with that. I don't think the zoning should come from the province. I think we're the people who live in our city. We're the people who know our city. We're the people who are excited and engaged and want to represent our city. And we all seem to be active, engaged listeners who can hear what both our constituents and constituents in other wards are thinking. So no, I think it's entirely inappropriate for zoning to come from the province. And further, if you look at those of us sitting on this panel, if the rest of council looks anything like those of us sitting on this panel, I guarantee we can come to a lot of consensus and make decisions. We're all saying, variations on the same theme, but we're all trying to move Guelph forward in a healthy, sustainable way while listening to the needs and concerns of our people. So I really think the strong mayor legislation, it kind of would render councils irrelevant. What are we all doing here if our decision just gets overruled at the end of the day? Thank you.
Thank you, Sam. Next respondent, I would ask Kevin Bowman to comment on this, please.
Yes, thank you. So, I'm pretty much opposed to MZOs and the strong mayor bills. They were pretty explicitly created for the purpose of circumventing the normal democratic process. So it's not even like they're trying not to be that. It's pretty bold. And those are both a result of the unfortunate situation that all municipalities in Ontario and Canada face, which is that all municipalities are so-called creatures of the province, which is a layman's way of saying that we're not recognized in the Constitution. The Constitution of Canada names the nation, the federal government, and it names the provinces, and it tells them what they're responsible for and what their powers are. Municipalities are not mentioned. And so we don't have any legal grounds. The province can do whatever they want. Doug Ford could show up tomorrow and say, Guelph is dissolved as a city. You do not exist anymore legally. And there's nothing we can do to stop him. I've always found that very strange. I don't understand why municipalities across the country have not pushed for some kind of legal recognition, either a constitutional amendment or something else that explicitly puts into law that municipalities have X rights and the province can't interfere with them, just like the federal government can't march into a province and do whatever the heck it wants.
Thank you, Kevin. Luke, comments on this particular question?
Well, nobody should be surprised that this is happening? Let's be really clear. This is the provincial government that has outlawed more representative forms of democracy in municipalities in this province, right? They outlawed it. They've said, no, you can't change the way that you do this because it disadvantages us. That's why that happened. It has nothing to do with, oh, it's not the right time or whatever other excuse they're going to. It disadvantages voters and it's less representative democracy. This is just some strong arm garbage and it's duplicitous policy. Because if this were a Liberal government saying the same thing, I would have the same things to say about it. And I would bet money that conservatives among us would have a huge problem with these ideas. What are these policies about? They are certainly not for the best of municipalities. They are certainly not for the best of individual citizens. They are certainly not for the best of individual inhabitants that are of lower socioeconomic status and do not serve to benefit in any way economically from these decisions. They're not about any of those things. They're about maintaining power with people that have power already and making more money for people that already have money. That's what this is about. It's not anything other than that. It's deeply problematic.
Thank you, Lou. Okay. Thank you, everybody, for your comments on all of those seven questions. I beg your pardon. See, I another victim of my time management here. Phil, you're on.
David, that's quite all right. We're all victims of that. And we're such an incredibly cuddly group anyway. It's nice to see us all getting along. But I am going to parse the question a bit because I think that there are two aspects to it. With regards to the strong mayor's legislation, I'm 100% opposed to it. It does not just provide a mayor with a veto authority, but it also provides the mayor with the opportunity to set a budget and to hire senior staff. I am going to give credit to our senior administration and Scott Stewart in particular for stating unequivocally that this would be a dangerous thing to do. I appreciate that because what it does is it politicizes our staff. The other thing that it does is it in some way truncates the authority of the ward councillor. And that to me is a real concern. Why have ward councillors if we don't deal with zoning and we don't deal with planning and we do not deal with a budget? Why not just have everybody phone the mayor? Because I'm happy to give you the mayor's home number if you want, but I'm not going to do that, by the way. But with regards to the other issue, MZOs, the caution that I have is that there are times that an MZO is regrettably an important option to have. And I'll give you a good example. I do not believe in it for buildings, for putting skyscrapers in if you want, for putting an abattoir in the middle of a neighborhood. I do believe in it for protecting natural resources like water. Regrettably, we have to separate out MZOs from the current government that we have. An MZO can be used thoughtfully with a thoughtful government. And Kevin is quite correct, because there is no legislated authority for cities in the Constitution. We must rely on a provincial government for these kinds of authorities. So the MZO can at some points be used, just not the way this government is doing it. The MZO is not a de facto way to put in more houses everywhere you want.
Thank you, Phil. And my apologies for skipping on your inclusion there. Now, the good news, surprising good news, is that we do have a little bit of time left for some questions that have been posed by our resident attendees at this evening's session. We didn't set up any particular method of handling this, so I will leave it to the candidates who have been able to see the questions that have been posed in the chat room to respond to the questions that have been posted. So I will ask, starting with Michelle, see whether you see a question there that you in particular would like to respond to. And I would ask you, given the time available, to keep your responses close to a minute each, if at all possible. Michelle?
Sure, and I'll start with a question. Healthcare is a municipal issue from EMS, which is 50% funded by municipalities. Health units are 30% funded by cities. Cities have not for profit long-term home care, long-term care homes, and we're trying to fight for profit private clinics taking patients and staff from our local hospitals. Will you commit to safeguarding our local public health unit, EMS, long-term care homes and hospitals? Absolutely, 100%. As I said, this is an area that's close to my heart. I worked in the healthcare system for many, many years. My office is currently up at the Wellington Terrace, which is a long-term care home, and we're struggling for staff because they're being taken by private agencies and being paid a lot more money through the agency than what we can pay them. And I would certainly advocate as strongly as I can to ensure that we keep our public health units safeguarded and our staff where it needs to be.
Thank you. Luke, there's a question from the public that you'd like to address that you've seen in the chat room.
Oh, I'm gonna jump on that one too, because the argument for privatizing healthcare is just neoliberal capitalism sort of run off the absolute rails. We have to look no further away than our southern neighbors, and then across the Atlantic to insert Scandinavian country here, to see systems that are wildly different and take care of people in wildly different ways. One of them disadvantages everybody except the very rich. That's a private system. The other systems care for people in their communities.
Okay, thank you. Kevin, is a question that you have seen in the chat room that you particularly would like to respond to?
I see two. I'll touch on the healthcare thing as well. Yes, I totally agree. Healthcare is not just a provincial issue, and I very much support the city working very closely with public health. And obviously, we oversee EMS services for not only Guelph but the surrounding county as well. And long-term care, we've got the Elliott community, and not in Guelph but nearby Wellington Terrace, which are some of the better long-term care facilities in the country, as far as I'm aware. And so those are great models, and we should be replicating that and expanding them. I also saw a question about how to improve infrastructure, roads, water systems, sewers to support infill, specifically in Ward 3. Maybe I'm misunderstanding the question, but I think what they're getting at is the existing infrastructure good enough for infill development to happen, or will it need to be significantly upgraded? And I'm not sure I know the answer to that question, because I'm not sure how much of that infrastructure is old or relatively recent. But infill developments typically require less investment in infrastructure than new developments, because if you go to a greenfield, it's literally a greenfield. There's nothing there. You have to build it all.
Okay, thank you. Phil, any question that comes to mind that you've seen from residents, attendees here?
Actually, to be honest, all of them, but I just saw one come up. I would have liked to have dealt with the infrastructure, but I think I'll deal with local business in the role on council. I think council has a significant role in supporting local business. And I think that we need to work very hard through economic development to attract more local businesses, small businesses, which are the backbone of any economy. We need to make certain that we provide them with incentives. And I focus on the downtown in particular. One of the things that we must do is work earnestly toward downtown revitalization. That's why I'm keen on the library. That's the start of infrastructure redevelopment. And though I don't like everything about the library, there's some things about the location and so on I don't like, I must recognize that that project provides an impetus to business in the core. And we must also attend to businesses elsewhere by ensuring we have busing, and we have safe roads, and we have solid infrastructure. Interestingly, the infrastructure in Ward 3 is all over 40 years old. It's now at the end of its life, and we have to address the money issue, not just for infill, but for everyone, because frankly, we've got a time bomb on our hands in some senses. Our infrastructure will fail.
Sam, any questions that you've seen in the chat room that you'd like to respond to?
Sure, absolutely. I can go fairly quickly. But yeah, as far as the healthcare and long-term care homes, many people I've worked with in the past have transitioned to working in long-term care homes, and it's a really tough gig. It's hard to get people to work there, and it's hard to get people to stay working there long-term. I think the burnout rate is really high, and I think it's incumbent on us, however we can, to support long-term care homes and hospitals. As far as supporting local businesses, I actually opened a local business just before COVID, and I'm not doing it anymore. It was a bit of a hit, but anyway, but I think we can speed things along. We can listen, engage, and just go as quickly as we can, knowing these people have limited resources to get their business off the ground.
Okay. We're running out of time, fortunately. It's always the issue here. So I'm going to ask candidates, if you would please, give us some closing remarks or comments that you'd like to leave with the public regarding your particular campaign. And I will start almost in reverse order to our beginning, but I'll start the ball rolling with Phil. Closing remarks, 1 minute, if you could, please.
Thank you, David, and thank you everybody who put this together and everybody attending. I'm going to try to keep it short. In my view, democracy depends upon involvement. So I'm encouraging everyone to please vote this Saturday if you want, for not just your mayor and for your counselors, but for your school trustees as well. Remember that school budgets are exactly the same as a city, and the livelihood and the well-being of our kids and our future generations depends upon it. To promote democracy, help your preferred candidates. I hope it's me, but it might not be. That's fine. Let's make certain that democracy works, and let's make certain that the kinds of pestilence that has entered into democracy elsewhere in the world that lead to people hating on each other does not enter Ward 3. I was joking when I said we're a cuddly group here, but the fact of the matter is we get along quite well. We see the issues similarly. Let's keep Ward 3 the kind of place where democracy thrives through involvement. Vote early, just don't vote often. Thank you.
Thought that was coming. Sam, 1 minute, if you would, please.
Sure, thank you. Yeah, I would just like to thank everyone for this opportunity. I found it very educational. I found it inspiring. I really liked hearing the voices of the other candidates. And I agree as well. Just get out and vote. I think our turnouts have been a little lamentable in the past, but I also think that's our job. We need to get people excited. It's my job to make the people in Ward 3 want to vote for me. It's not their job to seek me out somewhere and find me. I have to go find them and get that job done. And so I'll keep doing that. And thank you all very much.
Thank you. Luke?
I think election cycles have us thinking in short term often about decisions we make. And sometimes I think that's really important because goals for climate change that are 25 or 30 years away aren't functional. 2, 3, 4 year goals, those are more functional, but they also lock us in infrastructure wise, for example, to thinking about what are we building next, what's going next, and not how much is it going to cost over time. I'm interested in future-proofing this city and making policy decisions that both act for today, but also have long-term decisions in mind. And I think that that's the most important thing that we can do right now, so that 40 years from now, my son can live here and be happy here.
Thank you. Kevin?
Thank you very much for having me, and thank you for everybody for attending. I would agree with the others in saying that everybody should go out and vote, preferably for me, but if not, that's okay too. You can vote this coming weekend, next weekend, or on voting day itself, October 24th. My pitch to you in trying to convince you to vote for me would be that I'm a millennial, I'm a renter, I'm a worker, so I feel like I'm bringing some perspectives that have been not represented at City Council. And I also happen to be fortunate enough to be in a position where, if elected, I can treat it as a full-time job, and that is my intention. So
thank you very much. Michelle, closing remarks.
Thank you. Yes, and Guelph is a great city, and I want to keep it as a great city. And I'm often surprised when I go through this process that people are so interested in what I think, because I see this role as a job, as an occupation. So you guys are, if you elected me, you're hiring me to work for you. And it's important that we stay connected, that we stay connected with each other. And then I make a commitment to make myself available to you, to bring forward on your behalf what's important to you. It may not necessarily be important to me, but if there's enough residents in the neighborhood that need it brought forward, that's my job to you. So looking forward to the next little while and working together to keep Guelph the great city it is and help it recover, revive, and thrive.
Thank you very much. Thank you all. We regret the unavailability of much more time for direct answers to residents' questions, but hopefully the extensive material that we've covered this evening will have addressed at least some of these. For further information or to volunteer or to get a sign, I'm sure each candidate will be delighted to hear from you, residents. So, but go see the Guelph City website for contact information with all of your candidates. And in closing, I would like to thank all candidates for their commitment to Guelph. Thank you also to our participants who've taken the time to learn more about the candidates and some of the crucial issues of our times. This event is the culmination of the collaboration of several volunteer groups in our community, and we thank each of them. So I wish everyone a good night, and once again, thank you very much. Bye-bye.